Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
So when you think about some of the biggest design challenges in biology, I mean, how nearly 2 meters of DNA folds itself into a tiny cell nucleus, that's got to be right up there.
Absolutely. It's mind-boggling. And it's not just about cramming it all in, right?
No, it's the organization. It has to fold precisely so these key control elements, the enhancers, can physically touch the genes they regulate, the promoters.
Yeah, and we're talking about elements that might be hundreds, even thousands of kilobases apart on the linear strand.
That's a huge distance.
It is, but they need to get really close physically within maybe 200 to 300 nanometers to actually make that connection work. It's like genome origami.
And for decades, the tools we had for mapping this, things like Hi-C, they always kind of hit this frustrating limit.
Mm-hmm. The resolution wall.
Exactly. Right. We could only really map interactions down to about 200 base pairs. So you could see the neighborhoods talking, maybe the street, but not the actual houses, not the handshake. Because 200 base pairs, that's roughly the size of just one nucleosome, or maybe a small transcription factor complex.
So we couldn't see the really fine details of how these regulatory handshakes were happening.
And that limitation was, well, it was huge. It meant we couldn't directly link the physical structure we saw to the actual biochemistry driving it all. We were missing the action at the protein scale.
Which brings us to this deep dive. We're looking at a breakthrough technology that basically shatters that barrier. It lets us resolve these contacts down to single base pair resolution.
Single base pair. It's a game changer.
That kind of detail, it's just revolutionary for understanding how genes are controlled. Now, making a leap like that, it doesn't just happen. We should definitely acknowledge the team behind this incredible work.
Yes, definitely. We're celebrating the work from the MRC Molecular Hematology Unit at the University of Oxford. Specifically, the team led by Hengpeng Li, James Dalglish, George Lister, and James Davies, working with collaborators from Cambridge and other places too.
And they were tackling this really fundamental question, weren't they? We know chromatin structure dictates gene expression, and we know enhancers and promoters touch.
But how? How do all these multi-protein complexes manage the structural gymnastics needed to make and keep that precise physical contact?
That was the missing piece.
Exactly. The resolution was the bottleneck. If you can't define the DNA structure in vivo, right there in the cell, at the scale of a single transcription factor or the mediator complex, well, you just can't connect the dots. You can't link the 3C contact data to the actual biophysics running the show. They needed a map that was way, way clearer.
Okay, so let's get into their new tool. They call it MicroCapture-C Ultra, MCCU for short. What's the magic here? How did they jump from 200 base pairs down to one?
Well, the really big innovation wasn't just about optimizing things, though they did a lot of that. It was more a shift in thinking.
Oh, yeah?
Older 3C methods, they deliberately filtered out the data from very short-range interactions, these short-range ligation junctions. They were mostly treated as noise, something to get rid of.
Right, messy background stuff.
But this team realized that buried in that noise was precisely the information they needed about the fine scale folding. If you could just map those short junctions really accurately.
Ah, so the treasure was in the trash heap, so to speak.
You could say that, but to get the clarity they needed, we're talking a tenfold jump in resolution, they had to collect 100 times more data than usual.
Wow, 100-fold increase.
Yep, massive data depth. And that required some serious technical optimization. Things like a specific single fixation step with 2% formaldehyde, sonicating the DNA library down to really short, like 200 base pair fragments.
Okay.
And then sequencing those fragments with long 300 base pair reads. All that technical rigor let them pinpoint those short, super important ligation junctions with incredible precision.
100 times the data.
Yeah.
That sounds like a monster computational task as well. This wasn't just clever lab work. It needed some serious bioinformatics muscle.
Oh, absolutely. A huge pipeline challenge.
Yeah.
And importantly, they didn't just rely on the MCQ data alone. They were really smart about integrating it.
How so?
They combined it with two other key things. First, they used molecular dynamics simulations. This was a chemically specific coarse-grained chromatin model. It let them simulate the biophysics, the DNA mechanics, the histone tails, charge interactions within arrays of nucleosomes.
So they're modeling the physics alongside the mapping.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And second, they developed a whole new bioinformatic pipeline. They call it contact sequence reconstruction. This was built specifically to take that raw MCView data and visualize contacts only between known transcription factor binding sites, the TFBSs.
So connect the map, the physics, and the specific protein landing pads. That's how they built the picture.
That's the integrated approach. And the findings. Pretty remarkable.
Okay, let's dive into those. What did they see at the finest scale?
Right down at the base pair level, MCQ showed these really complex fine-scale structures inside the regulatory elements themselves. They could actually map contacts between individual motifs where transcription factors bind.
Can you give an example? Like, what did that look like in a real gene?
Sure. So they looked at the active SOX2 promoter in embryonic stem cells. The maps didn't just show, you know, SOX2 region contacts enhancer region. No, they saw a specific contact happening between a particular POU5F1KLF motif and a GATA motif within those broader regions.
Okay, very specific points.
And here's the kicker. They looked for interactions between the KLF and GATA motifs themselves, and those were absent.
Ah, so it's not just random bumping around, it's structured.
Precisely. It's specific, like a lock and key, right down at the base pair level. Real architecture.
Okay, that's the handshake mapped. Now, zooming out a bit, they looked at these areas called nucleosome depleted regions, NDRs, the spots where histones get kicked out.
Right, the open, accessible bits of DNA.
We used to talk about these huge organizational domains, TADs. What did they find NDRs were doing?
They basically redrew the map at a much smaller scale. They found these NDRs act like boundaries, partitioning the chromatin into what they call nanoscale domains.
Nanoscale domains? How small are we talking?
Tiny compared to TADs. Maybe 100 to 1,000 times smaller. Think of them as the fundamental active building blocks for gene regulation. Much more local.
So instead of cities, the TADs, we're now looking at specific neighborhoods, these nanoscale domains, organized around these flexible NDR points.
That's a great analogy. And this structure directly informs how long-range communication happens, like between enhancers and promoters.
Okay, so how do those long-range connections fit into this nanoscale picture?
What they saw consistently was that the long-range EP contacts occurred precisely between these NDRs. The NDRs are the docking points.
Between NDRs. But what about within one of these nanoscale domains? Are the contacts inside also super specific?
Ah, that's where it gets really interesting. There's a contrast. Within a given nanoscale domain, the contacts seemed generally nonspecific.
Nonspecific, meaning?
Meaning pretty much all the regulatory elements within that domain's NDRs tended to bump into each other. They called it coalescence.
Yeah.
Like they all just sort of clustered together in that local zone.
Hmm. Okay. So specific docking between distant NDRs, but more of a general mingling within a local domain.
Mostly. Yes. The one big exception they noted was CTCF binding sites. Those made highly specific contacts, but only with other CTCF sites.
Which fits the loop extrusion models people talk about.
Exactly. It lines up perfectly with that idea.
Okay, this starts to paint a clearer picture of which proteins do what. Let's talk about the mediator complex. For years, many people thought of it as the architectural protein, right? The bridge, the glue, holding enhancers and promoters together over long distances.
That was definitely a dominant model, the molecular bridge idea.
So what did MCCU, especially combined with their experiments where they removed proteins, tell them about mediator's actual job?
Right, they used this cool technique, the DTAG system, to get rid of mediator components really quickly, specifically MET14 and MED13.
And what happened?
Well, they saw a significant disruption of the nanoscale structure right within the promoter's NDR, close to where transcription actually starts. So mediator is clearly crucial for organizing things locally, right at the gene starting line.
Okay, crucial locally, but wait, if it's the main long-range glue, removing it should make the enhancer-promoter connection fall apart completely, shouldn't it?
That's what you'd expect based on the old model. But here's the really paradigm-shifting finding. Getting rid of mediator caused only subtle changes in those long-range EP contacts.
Subtle changes, not a collapse.
Nope. Which strongly suggests mediator is vital for stabilizing the transcription machinery at the promoter, getting everything ready to go.
But it's not the primary architectural link that physically spans the huge distance from the enhancer.
Exactly. It's not the main bridge builder over those long genomic distances.
Wow. Okay, so if mediator isn't the main long distance connector, what is holding those distant elements together? What drives that physical coalescence of NDRs?
It seems to come down to the transcription factors and the NDRs themselves. They found that the long-range EP contacts only really collapsed when removing a key transcription factor like SOX2 at the mic gene actually caused the NDR itself to disappear.
You mean the open chromatin region physically closed up?
Yeah, they confirmed it by seeing the loss of signal in things like ATAC-SEC. If the NDR stayed open and intact, even without that specific PF, the long-range EP contacts were mostly fine.
So it's not about a specific protein bridge necessarily, but about the physical state of the chromatin, the presence of that open nucleosome-free region.
Precisely. It points directly towards their unified biophysical model. The physical contacts seem orchestrated by the biophysics of the chromatin structure, basically, having nucleosomes versus not having them.
Okay, explain that biophysical model. How does just removing nucleosomes drive this long-range organization?
This is where those molecular dynamic simulations really helped.
Yeah.
Imagine condensed chromatin like maybe a fairly stiff coil, pretty compact. Now, when transcription factors come in and boot out the nucleosomes to create an NDR, it's like introducing a segment that's suddenly very flexible and also highly negatively charged because you've removed all those positively charged histone proteins.
Ah, like putting a loose, floppy, charged piece into the stiff coil.
Exactly. That floppy, charged segment drastically changes the local physics. It reduces the attraction between the nucleosomes on either side. And this change causes the chromatin to naturally partition itself into those distinct nanoscale globules or domains we talked about.
So the default is condensed, maybe locally interacting chromatin.
Right. Then maybe you get some histone modifications, like acetylation, which loosens things up a bit, helps keep active enhancers near the surface of this condensed stuff. They call it the pure chromatin layer.
And then the transcription factors create the NDRs.
And those NDRs, being super flexible and negatively charged, well, the model suggests they tend to coalesce together, kind of non-specifically, floating above the main condensed chromatin mass.
Coalesce. Why? Just because they're similar physically?
Yeah, their biophysical properties make them likely to cluster. And by doing that, they effectively restrict their own movement, maybe more to a 2D surface above the bulk chromatin. This drastically increases the chance they'll bump into each other. The enhancer NDR finds the promoter NDR, making gene activation much more efficient.
So it's less about a specific tether and more about creating these flexible zones that naturally find each other because of physics, increasing the odds of interaction.
That seems to be the core idea.
Okay, so summing this deep dive up, MCQ gives us this incredible base pair resolution view. It shows specific protein contacts within regulatory elements are key locally, involving things like mediator.
Right, for local organization.
But the larger scale coalescence, bringing distant enhancers and promoters together, seems fundamentally driven by the biophysics, by kicking out nucleosomes, creating flexible NDRs, and letting physics bring these active zones together.
It unifies the mapping, the biochemistry, and the physics into one coherent picture. It's a really powerful model.
No, we should add the usual caveat.
Always. This study, while deep, focused on a relatively small number of genes, about 15 promoters, 25 enhancers. So while the model is compelling, generalizing it genome-wide needs more work. That's the next step for the field.
Understood. It's a foundational study. But this unified model, thinking about organization through physics, it really changes how you might think about things. So here's something to ponder. What does this model mean for understanding genetic variations? Say, mutations that don't hit a transcription factor binding site directly, but instead just subtly change nucleosome positioning or the stiffness of the DNA linker between them. Could those seemingly minor physical changes actually alter gene expression significantly by tweaking this coalescence dynamic?
That's a fascinating question. It opens up a whole new angle on non-coding variation.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CCB Y4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.